This is the ESPNU College Football Podcast.
College Football Podcast.
Your host today, Ivan Maisel.
Hello and welcome to the ESPNU College Football Podcast. It's Tuesday, February 9th. This is Ivan Maisel, senior writer at ESPN.com. And I am joined in his post-Super Bowl frenzy and hangover by the Bard of Pittsburgh, Beano Cook. How are you, Beano?
Excellent, excellent. Am I getting a Valentine from you this week?
Well, I don't want to spoil it. I got 5 days left, Beano.
Okay.
Yeah, it's
okay. I don't want people to get the wrong idea, but I expect a Valentine.
Okay, that's a lot of pressure. A little trivia for you, Beano, based on the Super Bowl from our friend Bruce Feldman, who had this in his blog today. Purdue becomes the second school in Super Bowl history to have three different Super Bowl winning quarterbacks.
Well, that's a great stat.
Yeah. Now they are the second. So who are those three, and then who is the other school?
Well, Greasy.
Right.
The other school?
Well, you got Breeze, Greasy, and one other quarterback from Purdue to win a Super Bowl.
I could maybe figure it out, but
yeah. Len Dawson.
Dawson, yeah, that's
yeah,
right.
Yeah. Dawson.
Now, what's the other? Some other school has two.
Has three. Three different quarterbacks to have won the Super Bowl.
Stanford?
No. Stanford has only had
two
different quarterbacks who won a total of three, I guess. Plunkett.
No, that's a different quarback.
Yeah.
No, they won a total of four. Plunkett won two, and
oh,
LA
that's right.
won two.
That's right.
Pretty good.
So the other one, it's actually, this will be a, you will slap your forehead.
Ohio.
Alabama won the first three Super, they won the first three with Bart Starr and Joe Namath and then Ken Stabler.
Oh my heavens.
In the 70s.
That's right.
So Alabama did it by 1976 and hasn't won another, and it took 34 years, 33 years, whatever, to for another school to equal that.
That's a great stat. That's a trivia question that's where the answer is interesting.
Yes.
A trivia question has to have an interesting answer.
Oh, I know, because boring, yeah, they're boring trivia questions.
Yeah, that's a great one. Mr. Feldman, you are a genius.
Yes, he is. He is, and we're all glad to work with him. Beano, it's the middle of February, of course. We're just beginning to think about spring ball. We got through signing day, and I wanted to ask you a couple of things, or at least discuss with you a few things about signing day. One is Chantrell Henderson from the Minneapolis area, I believe, a 6'8". Defensive lineman who has committed to USC, but he will not sign until he finds out what the NCAA decides about USC and its infractions case.
Well, you are convinced they're going to get hit, aren't you?
I think they're going to get hit. Now, the hearing is a week from Friday in Tempe, Arizona. It begins a week from Friday. And I just think they're going to get hit, if only because the NCAA has combined the basketball case with O.J. Mayo and the football case with Reggie Bush's parents and the agent. And I have no, inside knowledge other than just having been around it a long time. Usually when they do that, they're going after those four dreaded words, lack of institutional control. And when they find that, when the infractions committee finds a lack of institutional control, they are not shy in their response.
What do you think they would do? Loss of scholarships? I think there are two penalties that can loss of scholarships and not allowed on television.
Well, and TV is an old penalty that has fallen out of fashion because they didn't feel it was very effective, and it also penalized the other school.
Yes, that's especially Notre Dame.
That's right. Loss of scholarships is how they hurt a school.
That's what they did to Alabama, right?
They've done it to a lot of people. Alabama, the most recent and difficult example or pulling out of it. It took Alabama most of this decade to emerge from it, and only and of course they have under Coach Nick Saban over the last 3 years. But prior to that,
yeah. Yeah.
It was just a lot of 7-6 and 4-9 with an occasional 10-win season thrown in.
That is not acceptable in Tuscaloosa.
No. Or Mobile, Birmingham, Huntsville, Montgomery.
In fact, the whole state.
Or Sylacauga. Yeah, so that's absolutely true. So, I think I was trying to think. I can only think of one other blue chip recruit who has waited and has not signed immediately in recent years, and that was 2 years ago with Terrell Pryor, who dangled himself in front of Michigan and Oregon before finally signing with Ohio State.
Yeah. Living in west of Pennsylvania, where he's from, it turned a lot of fans off. They got tired of it.
Yes.
Sign.
Yeah.
Well, we know you're a great player. Kind of soured me on him, but I quickly forgot. I think he's a heck of a player, and maybe it was just he was immature. I would not have to pay for all the immature mistakes I made before I grew up when I was 45.
I was going to say, what exactly age you were? I was going to ask that. Thank you.
45.
Yeah. You grew up when you were 45, so...
Finally.
Yeah, I might have beat you a little bit on the growing up part. Something about being a parent, I think.
Yes, yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, and the other recruiting story, and it's a head scratcher, Bino, is the 13-year-old quarterback in Delaware who was promised a scholarship by USC. Who else? By USC coach Lane Kiffin. And the headline came out and everybody just sort of shuddered, you've got to be kidding. Arash Markazi, who is my colleague at ESPN, he works for ESPN Los Angeles, actually spoke to David Sills, the 13-year-old seventh grader at Red Lion Christian Academy in Bear, Delaware, and also to David's father. And it painted a little bigger picture. And what it comes down to is that Sills, young David, has been a camper in a quarterback camp run by Steve Clarkson, the former San Jose State quarterback who is now considered one of the leading quarterback gurus in the country. He runs a quarterback camp out in California. And he has... was responsible in part for the development of Matt Barkley and was also, he's got a long record of having developed quarterbacks, and he sent Kiffin tape of David Sills, who is already 5'11 at age 13. And Kiffin looked at the tape and said, I would give that kid a scholarship. So,
I feel sorry for the kid. I mean, he's 13 years old and he's going to have that pressure on him, and it's bad enough now. I mean, it's all beyond me. I mean, you're a lot younger than I am. You can handle this. I just can't believe it. I can't believe that if he went to the kid and said, look, the way you play, you have a scholarship to USC if you want it. But for your own, I think for your own good, let's not say anything. And you're not committed. Because the pressure on this kid is, I don't know anybody who's received this much publicity this young since Secretariat. I mean, it's
who had a much better career.
The kid.
Yeah.
That's the way. He's probably going to be a great player, but here he is, 13 years old, and we're talking about him in Bristol, Connecticut, and other parts of Connecticut and Pittsburgh. It's all beyond me. The only other athlete I can remember that got this much publicity at such an early age was first Will Chamberlain and then Lou Alcindor. Now later Kareem Abdul-Jabbar. But Chamberlain, when he was, 8th or 9th grade, everybody knew about him. So I just feel sorry for the kid. That's the way.
I think the disservice that's been done is it puts a target on his back.
Yeah.
Every defense he's going to face from 8th grade on up is going to be looking for him. And it reminds me a little bit of the case of Chris Leak, who's the former Florida quarterback, who his older brother, CJ, was signed by Jim Caldwell, of all people, when he was the head coach at Wake Forest. And Jim promised Chris a scholarship at Wake, and when Chris was in middle school. And of course, Jim was by the time Chris got to be recruitable, Jim had left Wake Forest, and Chris went on to Florida, where he helped win the Gators' first national championship in 2006, the first in the previous decade under Urban Meyer.
Yes.
But even that, and part of it is the way the media is now. I understand that, but yeah, even that was somewhat subdued compared to this. And it will be interesting to watch young David in the coming years and see if he approaches anywhere near the hype that we've begun to give him.
Yeah, when they go on the road, they're visiting. I mean, the hometown students are going to give it to him. If he has a bad day, they're going to yell things at extra hard because of the publicity this kid gets. This is unbelievable.
It reminds me of when one of my kids at roughly that age wanted a tattoo, and I just said, well, let me ask you a question. When you were 5 years old, did you want to, if you had wanted a tattoo, you probably would have gotten Barbie, right? And she said, yeah. I said, well, you'd still have it. I mean, kids' minds change, and USC's fortunes may change, and of course he could certainly change, or he may not turn out to be a quarterback. He may turn out to be a great quarterback, but it just seems awful early.
It certainly does.
A little bit early, but nonetheless, we're going to talk about next fall with the news since our last podcast, Beano, that of two really big opening weekend games, I think. We made it official. I say we, ESPN, helped make it official that the Boise State-Virginia Tech, quote, neutral site game, unquote, at FedEx Field in Washington has been moved to Labor Day night, September 6th. On a network that has not been determined yet, and a game that you, I'm sure, will be paying attention to.
Oh, I think it's a great move on our part. We get those games scheduled, and people complain about the power of TV, but I guarantee you this is one game everybody would like to see on television, and it'd be the only game that night. It'd be tremendous. It's great for Boise State, and I think there'll be more Virginia Tech fans there, obviously.
Sure.
But still, it's a very attractive game, and this second game is 2 days earlier, and you correct North Carolina and LSU in Atlanta.
And the Chick-fil-A Kickoff Classic will be the third one, the first one without Alabama. LSU and North Carolina, two teams that are will have great expectations next fall.
Yeah, North Carolina would not have accepted this if they didn't think they could compete. I mean, LSU is a bigger power, we know that. But North Carolina is very confident about being able to compete in this game. I don't think Butch Davis would have said yes to this unless he thought he could compete and maybe win. So that's a great weekend, and it's great. Those are two great games, and I'm especially excited about the Monday night game.
Well, and the thing that occurs to me is what Nick Saban said about playing in Atlanta, the reason he wanted to play in Atlanta, and Alabama has opened the season in this game the last 2 years and won convincing victories against Clemson and Virginia Tech. And, he did it in part for the recruiting exposure in Atlanta. And I looked at the signing day numbers last week, and I think there were 18 kids in the ESPNU 150 from Georgia. Georgia only signed six of them, and that's probably a good percentage.
Oh yeah.
Yet Texas, for instance, in the University of Texas, signed 12, I believe, kids in the ESPNU 150 from Texas. So I think Atlanta is a little more open territory, is my point, than the state of Texas is. And I don't know. I know that the Chick-fil-A people have discussed moving the Georgia-Georgia Tech game to the opening weekend, and that there has been some a lack of interest from a, you know, I'm not sure which school. But anyway, I think the power of Atlanta as a recruiting base is what is luring these teams.
Yeah, Georgia has a lot of football players. The
yes.
state.
Yes.
I mean, it's unbelievable.
Now, the other game opening weekend that I noticed yesterday when I was nosing around, pining for Labor Day weekend to hurry up and get here, involves the Pitt Panthers, who will be opening against Utah on Thursday night, September 2nd.
Yeah, that's a good game. Pitt has a two-game series with Utah, and the other non-conference games for Pitt next year include Notre Dame and Miami.
Wow.
That's a pretty good non-conference schedule, Wally. You know, I mean, that's the way Pitt's always done that. They play tough teams. And
when you're in a big league town, you've got to put a product out there that will draw fans.
And you're not the state university with 8 million alumni.
Right.
That's the big difference. Yeah. I mean, Penn State and Georgia and Florida, those teams can play anybody with all the alumni that they have. But I always like to point out to my Penn State fans that you might outdraw Pitt, that's obvious, but we have a bigger endowment, and that's the real test of the alumni, the endowment. So, so Stanford does quite well in that. And but again, that's pretty good. 5 days of football. And there are probably some other games on the first Saturday we just don't know about.
That is true, and I have not looked at it in earnest.
I know where you're going that weekend. You're going to FedEx Field, Boise State and Virginia Tech. We can announce that right now. You're going to be there that Monday night.
Well, I certainly hope so, and I might even go to a game before that. You know,
we know that.
Yeah, the opening weekend this past fall, I went to the Oregon Boise State game on Thursday night, and then LSU Washington on Saturday, and had a ran into a little bit more news than I expected with the LeGarrette Blount punch, but nonetheless, it was a lot of fun.
One thing about the letter of intent that I think it's great they did it. I think it's the first Wednesday in February. I always thought it was the second Wednesday, but the first Wednesday in that month, and I think it's great. Having been at Pitt for 10 years as a sports information director and seen how the coaches had to go out in April and May and also the big thing they had to do in recruiting was try to get kids summer jobs.
Right.
I mean, I don't think that goes on as much now, but because all these kids in the summer are already enrolled.
That's right.
You know, they're there.
That's right. They have to, you know, that's part of the deal.
It's a 12-month job. Already there now, you know, at some of these schools.
Sure. Alabama and Florida each had 11 players enroll in January.
Oh, my God.
And I talked to Steve Sarkisian, the Washington coach, yesterday. They're on the quarter system, and he's expecting three players or hoping for three players to enroll in March.
Yeah, I'm against all that. I think the last few months in high school are something special. Now, you can say they can go back and you go to the prom and all that. It's not the same.
It's not the same.
The same. And now they're talking. Some coaches want you're allowed to sign players in December. Well, my feeling on that is
early signing day. You mean like
day.
In basketball? Sure.
They have three, but there should be a limit. Should be a limit if they do it. I'm against it. I think February is good enough. Oh. If they do it, I hope it's like. You're allowed to sign four kids.
What good would a limit do? Why have a limit?
Well, I just believe in that. Have a limit.
Yeah. Okay.
I mean, that doesn't mean you don't believe in that.
No, I don't. I think if a kid wants to sign early and get all the other coaches and recruiters off his back, then let him do it.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's your feeling. My feeling is three or four.
Now, I'll tell you this about it, Bino. I was speaking with Frank Spaziani at Boston College about another story yesterday, and he said, I love the kids who enroll early. He said, and I wish we could, if I could change it, I would have everybody enroll in January.
Well, I know they would.
Yeah.
Selfish people in the world.
No, but his point is
Congress and football coaches.
Well, no, his point was not in terms of depriving the kid of a senior year. He just said, think about, he said, when a kid shows up in September, he's got to get acclimated to the academics. He's got to get acclimated to football. He's got to worry about making the team. He's got to deal with two-a-days, and it's a lot to throw at an 18-year-old kid. He said if he gets here in January, he said he can get acclimated to academics. He said, and then in spring practice comes along, and he can get acclimated to football, and it's...
I don't buy that argument.
It's one-a-day.
Number one, the freshman started... The first year for a freshman was, what, 72?
71, somewhere in there, yeah.
Well, there was no problem. I mean, a lot of... No, I just feel a kid should have a senior year in high school in the high school.
Yes.
That's the way I feel. No. I don't care what these football coaches... Don't kid yourself. They only care about winning games. You can give all this stuff about the kids and all that.
Yes.
It's about winning games, and it's... They feel they're better prepared to win games if they do that. Have them all in January. I don't buy it. The last free lunch most kids get will be a senior year in high school.
That is true.
Okay.
It's hard to beat your senior year in high school, except maybe your senior year in college, I think. Yeah.
Well, senior year in college, you're going to the real world. When you're getting out of high school, if you're going to college,
but it's the oldest you'll ever be without being in the real world.
That's right.
Yeah. So that's what's good about it. One other point of news I wanted to touch upon, Beano, and it came about sort of almost an afterthought, but Florida State officially announced after losing its appeal to the NCAA that it would vacate 12 football wins that it gained under Bobby Bowden. In that academic scandal, because of the academic scandal, the NCAA ordered that the wins be vacated. And only reason I'm bringing it up is that when the NCAA announced this penalty last year, we all railed at the injustice because we wanted to see the horse race between Joe Paterno and Bobby Bowden continue on and on.
But I told you Paterno was going to win that.
You did, and you were right. But
never in my doubt. I think it's crazy. They have to forfeit these games. That's the way I feel.
Well, and I agree, but my point is simply, once the race ended and Florida State pulled Bobby Bowden up in the race, in the horse race, if I can butcher that metaphor, then all of a sudden it didn't really matter whether they vacated the victories or not. It's like nobody really cared anymore. And they put the news out on Super Bowl Sunday when it would get buried, and it barely made a splash. It struck me as odd that all of a sudden, once the race was decided, nobody really cared whether they vacated the wins or not.
Yeah, I just think it's silly. Say team didn't win the game. It won't make any difference in Las Vegas, obviously.
But, no, that's true.
Again, I just think it, they hit them, fine them. But that's the way I feel. That's the way I feel.
Okay, well, we do want to point out, Beano, that tomorrow posting is this the first, Jay, the first NFL draft podcast? That is true with our friends Todd McShay and Mel Kiper.
Oh, my God. We're going to have what? When is that? April 24th or something?
Yeah, well, you can't get those big boards ready early enough.
I'm not saying Mel Kiper's amazing. Mel Kiper. It's unbelievable how big he is in this country because people always ask me about Mel Kiper. I mean, it's what he's done is amazing.
But yes.
The draft, it just goes on and on. And you live in a town like Pittsburgh, or you live in a pro town.
Yes.
You have the talk shows. Why don't they trade this draft choice to get this guy and this guy, as if you can pick up the phone and have it done. I mean, it will go on and on. Now, I don't know. I don't have any idea what the Steelers are looking for. But my feeling is they better get some defensive cornerbacks. Cornerbacks, that's what they are.
Yeah.
Cornerbacks. But, if that's what they need and they think they need, they're going to list all the cornerbacks in the paper who are going to be rated highly and all this stuff.
And Todd and Mel have been watching video studiously since all these kids were 13-year-old quarterbacks in Delaware, I think.
You should talk to Mel's wife. I talk to Mel a lot. I won't know until after the draft, but wife, Kimberly, some, what's she doing? Oh, he's down there looking at film.
Shocking.
Yeah. Well,
there's
yeah.
a woman who deserves a medal.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. On the birthday calendar, Beano, the College Football Hall of Fame birthday calendar, February 8th, yesterday, Bruce Smith, the 1941 Heisman Trophy winner from Minnesota.
A lot of, you know, they say if you can get his autograph, see, nobody has his autograph.
You're kidding.
That once. And his autograph of all the famous football players, that autograph, they say, would pull a lot of money. Nobody has it. He won the Heisman Trophy in 41. I remember seeing a movie called Bruce Smith All-American. Minnesota won the national title in 40 and 41. And he died. He died in the late 60s, early 70s. I remember Tom Harmon, who played against Bruce Smith. And they played that famous game in 1940, which decided the national title. And Minnesota won it. I believe it was 7-6, but I'm not sure. And I think Bruce Smith had a long run, I believe. Somebody would tell you in the email. But again, he died early. I remember Tom Harmon doing a commentary on him on the radio, and because he knew him and played against him. But Bruce Smith is one of those players. I don't, you know, they're probably film clips, but I have never seen that many. But he was a great player.
Well, it was 7-6. Beano, Minnesota won in a game. It's called the Battle of Giants, that game. And
Minnesota scored, if I recall, was a 64-yard run by Smith.
Oh, well, that's not – I just went to the Little Brown Jug Wikipedia entry. So, if you want details, you better not go to Wikipedia.
Well, somebody was sending us an email.
Yes.
Whatever it is.
Okay. The other birthdays I wanted to mention, a trio, three in a row of great coaches, beginning on February 13th, Saturday, Eddie Robinson, Sunday, Woody Hayes, February 14th, and then Monday, February 15th, Earl Red Blake.
What a trifecta that was.
That is. I don't know about you, but when I think of Valentine's Day, Beano, I think of Woody Hayes.
Did you know that was when he was born?
When I read it, I was reminded of it, but I had forgotten it.
Can you believe that? Easy going, Woody Hayes, born on Valentine's Day.
Well, you think of red roses and candy, yeah, with Woody.
Yeah.
And torn up yard markers.
Yeah.
So, as you and I were talking about it yesterday, Woody will have to keep an eye out for the centennial of his birth, which will be in 4 years. So I'm sure that they are already planning that celebration in Columbus.
I know they did with Rockne in 1988, and they won a national title.
Well, there you go. I've forgotten that. That's a good point. So that makes Ohio State the
early favorite
in 2014. Let's go to the email, and one of us, and I won't name names except to say that it was not you, got something incorrect.
Ivan and Beano, you're wrong.
This comes from Seth Castleberry, who writes, I love your college football podcast with Beano. I couldn't help but pick up on something you stated in the last podcast when you were talking about Temple, and you said Villanova was only a play or two away from being the FCS champion. In fact, Villanova did win the FCS championship this year in a great game against Montana. So thank you, Seth. I was just a play or two away from being right.
Listen, Jay, I'm innocent on that. That's just Ivan.
Yeah, well, I pointed that out.
He has to listen to you.
Yeah, that's true.
I'm stuff to do, I know, but still.
Yeah. Hey, wait a minute. Okay, from Exeter, England, Phil Hosking says, hi, Ivan and Beano, just to say, and I wish I could do an English accent, but I can't, just to say I can barely speak English. Just to say I'm a big fan of your podcast. I live in Exeter, England, and got into college football while visiting a friend in Tennessee. I'm a big Vols fan and watch all the games over here via ESPN 360. Really enjoy your show and Beano's knowledge. It's good knowing the history behind it all. Isn't that amazing? A guy in England watches football games on his computer.
Yeah, Tennessee.
Yes.
Yeah.
And then two Southern emails, Mike Henry in Nashville. says, I love the insight and history that you, Beano, and Gene Wojciechowski give out to us loyal listeners. I was wondering how a lot of the most famous nicknames in college football came to be, such as the Rose Bowl's granddaddy of them all, and what your favorite nicknames are. So what is your favorite nickname, Beano? Is it, you had any that spring to mind?
No, no. Actually, my school, Pitt Panthers, but granddaddy of them all is that was, that's the TV promos. Yeah, the granddaddy of them all, the Rose Bowl, 4:30.
Yes.
On New Year's Day. I'm trying to think of, well, there's a funny nickname. There's some funny nicknames. I'm trying to think my favorite nickname of all the colleges. I can't, top of my head, bottom of my head, I can't think of one.
I love the rivalry nicknames because they're sort of a little bit of Americana in them. You know, the Floyd of Rosedale and
yeah,
the Little Brown Jug and the Iron Bowl. You know, when
the Little Brown Jug is the one.
Yeah.
Well, I heard of when I was 8 or 9 years old. Now, that's my favorite.
Well, you are a big Glenn Miller fan, I think.
Yeah, I like Glenn Miller, yeah. Absolutely.
Yeah, me too. And, of course, that was one of his big hits, and it was named Little Brown Jug. Had to do with an early water jug that...
Somebody stole?
I think Minnesota left a Little Brown Jug at Michigan or vice versa, and I think they left it at Michigan, and Fielding Yost said, well, we'll play you for it. You know, we're not going to give it back to you. You're going to have to play us for
it. I never knew that.
Yeah, I think that's right.
You know, lost it or left it somewhere.
Yes.
But I did. It's great. Little Brown Jug.
Yeah,
you and me. Yeah, oh, yeah.
Okay.
Glenn Miller.
Yeah. And, of course, Glenn Miller went to the University of Colorado. There's still a little memorial for him in the student center there on campus. If you ever go to a CU game and you're a fan of big band jazz, I recommend it. And the last email, Curtis Tarver in Greensboro. Question for Beano. Beano, your disdain for baseball, once football ends, is well noted. Do you ever take a look at college lacrosse?
No, but I say... one of the best events of the year, from what I've heard, is the Final Four in lacrosse.
Yes,
I'd rather watch lacrosse than some baseball game.
Yes, well, and last year the championship game in men's lacrosse in the NCAA was one of the great sporting events I've ever watched. An incredible comeback by Syracuse against Cornell. Two upstate New York schools, and of course my wife grew up in Syracuse and went to Cornell, and she still cannot speak about that game without leaving the room.
What was the crowd?
Oh, it was packed.
Yeah,
they sell. I don't know that they fill. I think last year the game. I don't remember whether. I think the game was at the Patriots Stadium last year. I could be wrong, but
hey, it was. Yeah.
Yeah, they do big. I don't know if they fill them, but they do big numbers.
Oh yeah.
So
yeah, lacrosse, good sport. Tell them who the greatest lacrosse player of all time is.
Jim Brown.
Jim Brown.
Yeah.
Can you imagine Jim Brown with a stick?
Yes, running at you, and you're not wearing pads.
Yeah.
Yeah, I would
say it.
Yeah.
Unbelievable.
Yeah, that's right. Well, Beano.
Yeah, we fooled him again.
It's February, and we fooled him again.
Even with all the snow, we still fooled him. We don't have all those. We didn't have the games to talk about, but we hope that we did make this podcast interesting, and we hope you join us 2 weeks from today. And you're the genius from Stanford. I believe it is the 23rd. Is that the 23rd? And we're on again.
Yes. 9 and 14 is 23. We've confirmed that with Jay. So
I did it this way. 9, 16, 23. I can't use double digits.
At least without you taking your shoes off so you can use your toes, right?
Yes.
Well, for Beano Cook, this is Ivan Maisel. This has been the ESPNU College Football Podcast. Thanks for downloading us.
We'd like to thank you for listening to today's show. For more great podcasts, check out the Pod Center page at ESPNradio.com.